Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I was very, very angry when I watched it at the cinema. I came out and I was very angry. The performances are good and there's some interesting stuff in here, but I just think it's a little bit lazy.
I think it's a brilliant film, and the things that I was saying earlier that annoyed me, I think it's deeply flawed and agree with everything you've said, but I still really enjoyed it, and it's still a film I wanted to show other people.
I don't think I've laughed harder when they try the lift, the special move that they've been working out for.
You know, it's fun. I think it's a funny film. I think there's some good jokes in it.
It made me smile all the more second time around.
Welcome to this episode of the Flixwatch Podcast. Today I'm joined by Tatton.
Hello.
Diane.
Hello.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be chatting about Silver Linings Playbook.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Tatton and Diane. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, I'm Tatton and I run Simple Politics, which is a wide-ranging project, but you've probably only heard of the Instagram page because you don't love me. And that's something I have to deal with.
Hi, I'm Diane and I work for Tatton on Simple Politics, and I'm way more excited to be on here talking about films, which just makes a lovely change.
Films over politics.
There's just a lot of politics, isn't there? Just a lot of it.
All the time, everywhere, it seems, at the moment. I think half the world's in your account at the moment, aren't they? You've got close to 800,000 people on your Instagram account. How did you guys make that happen? That's kind of insane.
Well, we met this guy called Kobe who offered to run our podcast. And since that happened, it's all gone through the roof.
If only we could do that for FlixWatcher podcast and get 800,000 people on there. But you guys have been going for a while though, hasn't it?
It's been a slow burner. I mean, for Tatton more so than me, I've been around for a couple of years, but and Tatton's been around since 2013. Is it Tatton? 2015.
Yeah, 7 years this year.
Seven years. So, yeah, very much a word of mouth, Rolling Stone, you know. And yeah, to reach that number organically is amazing.
Honestly, kudos to you. And I think you've kind of arrived at the perfect time for shit shows to be tracked simply and sweetly, I guess.
I mean, it's all been about conflicts and shit shows. I set up in 2015 after the David Cameron general election, where David Cameron had won the first Conservative majority since John Major and was going to really boringly put in place the changes. And for me, as a bit of a nerd, I was like, well, this is fascinating. We're going to see Conservative ideology playing out in front of us. We're going to see what the opposition does. It's going to be a slow, interesting way to hold people's hands and explain to them what's going on. And then you had the anger and the misery of the Brexit vote. And then you had the Brexit fallout. And then you had a general election. And then you had more Brexit fallout. And then you had another general election. And that took us up until December December 2019, January 2019. And I remember actually in December 2019, I was texting Diane about what on earth do we do now? All the Brexit stuff's gone. Boris Johnson's got this huge majority. We've got 100,000 followers on Instagram. It's never going to get bigger than that. Maybe we should shut the page. Maybe this is it. Maybe we're done. Maybe our work here is done. And then, like, yeah, about 3 weeks later, kind of, we all got locked indoors and everyone wanted a page that would help understand what was going on. And we happened to be in the right place at the right time. And we've seen some growth in the last couple of years. And I hope that we've helped some people in the last couple of years. And but now, you know, as this turns endemic again, my goal is to get us to the next general election, cover the next general election, probably in 2024, and then see what happens after that. I mean, I don't think there will be a permanent need for the Simple Politics page.
Well,
maybe.
Now it's established, I think there's always people coming into the political realm. I mean, my knowledge of politics my knowledge and interest, I should say, was very limited before Brexit happened. Because I was just like, yeah, there'll be some Conservatives, there'll be some Tories, there'll be some Lib Dems. But generally, you know, it swings and roundabouts. And then when Brexit happened, I was like, holy shit, we need to actually pay attention. And so I think that started a lot of people getting interested. So yeah, your page has definitely helped out. I guess I see Helen on there copying, liking stuff as well. So I know you're
sharing to get that engagement up for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be there. Thank you, Helen.
And likes for show, shares for a pro. Right.
There you go. Use a film quote there that you were.
Yeah. See what I did.
I did.
I've watched some telly.
Watched some televisuals. We are talking about films today. We're talking about Silver Linings Playbook, which is your choice, Diane. Why, first of all?
Yeah.
Did you choose it? And then I'll get the stopwatch, I'll get the timer up, and you have 60 seconds or less to tell us the synopsis.
Okay, no pressure. I chose this film purely. I had really nostalgic vibes from watching it while I was pregnant, if I'm honest. When I was pregnant and I couldn't go out to the pub, I stayed in and watched a lot of films. This was one of them. And some of it has stayed with me. And I love, there's a couple of lines that I love, love, could still quote now, particularly of Tiffany's. So that's why I choose it.
Okay, let's get the synopsis going now.
Okay, so Silver Linings Playbook, you could describe it as a rom-com, but it's way more than that. It's a rom-com that also tackles mental health, mental illness, it's family, sport is in there too. So it's definitely more than just your average rom-com. It's all about a guy called Pat, who we meet at the very start, who's just been released from a psychiatric hospital or picked up by his mum, who was desperate to rescue him. He goes back and lives with his family. We find out lots about him really, really, really early on in the film. So we find out that he's had an incident with his wife's ex-lover that is very unfortunate. We find out sort of lots about what's going on with Pat. And then he, through his friends, meets a widow, Tiffany, played by Jennifer Lawrence, who is very quirky.
What's the timer gone?
Just a minute's up.
That's so much harder. Diane, it's
literally your job to summarize these things.
Oh.
What was that?
It is super tough. It is super tough.
What? I didn't even get to the finale.
You didn't even get to the beginning.
We'll discuss the plot. Don't worry, it's happening. Tatton, have you seen this before? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, I should declare an interest here because I'm diagnosed bipolar, and a lot of this film is about bipolar disorder. And I saw it at the cinema, I think, and it resonated hard. I was undiagnosed at that point. And then I used to do cinema screenings around Whitstable because I needed something to get me out of the house. And this is one of the films I chose to do that because I remember how much I loved it. And like really shortly before the screening, I got my diagnosis. And so it was quite intense to watch it then. And I watched it this afternoon. And yeah, well, I mean, I messaged Diane at the time, I was in floods of tears. And there's some stuff that I read that's still now, having lived with this diagnosis and understanding a lot more about myself than I did at that point, that still resonates. And there's some stuff that really pissed me off because it's not right.
Is there anything that, because this is, it'd be interesting to pull on one of those or a couple of those points where you think that's not an accurate representation.
I think, just generally, a manic episode is a thing that takes time. Being bipolar isn't just having wild mood swings, which can be involved, but the film often represents it as, oh, I'm up and I'm down, I'm up and I'm down. But you have depressive episodes and you have manic episodes, and they can take months to work through. And this film portrays bipolar disorder as being quite momentary, quite that's how upset I am with it. I can't say the word, I can't remember.
Is that about the time constraints of the of a film, though? I get that. I totally get that. No.
No, I don't think it is, because these things happen very quickly within a meeting, within time they're together, within a conversation. They'll flip and they'll switch and they'll go whatever. And the whole thing about him is that he has anger issues, right? And he switches and he flips and he does these things. And I'm not averse to anger issues myself, but that in itself isn't the bipolar bit. That's in response to other things that are going on. It's quick changes, in my experience and my research, quick changes of emotion and behavior are not that necessarily bipolar, because bipolar is a longer term thing, right? In fact, when you're getting to be diagnosed with bipolar, you need to have like at least one manic episode that lasts for 4 to 6 weeks. It's not about that quickness.
So when he comes back and he reads a book and throws it out, and in the morning after he's back to a stable condition, that's an example where you're pulling on where that's not an accurate representation.
Being angry, I think that is just having anger issues rather than a symptom of being bipolar.
Yes, I mean he has massive anger issues, and there is some manic behavior around that, but it doesn't stop and start in that way. In fact, if he behaved in the way that I saw, and with my, I'm not a doctor, but with my understanding of bipolar, my experience of bipolar, if he behaved like he did in that film, he would never have been diagnosed with bipolar. There's various other, like, I'm not, you know, mental health, we're all different, aren't we? Like, we've, like, all any diagnoses is in some way kind of, there's a line in the film that says, not right lumping you and I together. I wrote that down because I think it's such a wonderful line. It's not right lumping you and I together. And that's what all mental health diagnoses do. No one's the same. I'm not the same as somebody else who happens to have that label. It doesn't have that label. But those mood swings and that anger don't strike me particularly as being bipolar. And I'm going to shut up about my, oh God, love me, in a second. There's a lot of the behavior that from both of them. And let's face it, from Robert De Niro, who's also not okay.
Yeah.
That really does resonate. And resonated before I had a diagnosis, resonated today, that made me cry, not just because of what was happening to the characters, but what's been happening to me. Right? And that's surely the mark of a good film, is that it isn't just about the people on the screen in front of you anymore. It's become something deeply personal.
This time watching it, I think it's great that you pulled on Robert De Niro, because I think, well, the first time I watched it was in the cinema, and I think a lot of this went straight over my head. And in recent years, people are more open to talking about mental health, and especially in the last couple of years, it's become more of a conversation point and an open conversation point. This time it hit me a lot harder, and I resonated or empathised a lot more with what was going on the screen. And I definitely saw more in Robert De Niro's character than I'd previously recognised on this watch. This is my second time watching it. In the same way that there's that film Requiem for Your Dream, Darren Aronofsky's film, where it's talking about people with various different dependencies on drugs. And one of the characters there was a mother who started, I think she's taking like antidepressants. I can't remember, it was some kind of prescriptive drug. And because the other characters were taking illegal drugs, quote unquote, I didn't associate her with having a drug problem, because that was what was prescribed to her. And sometimes when, you know, it's easy to see what's going on with Chris Tucker and Jennifer Lawrence's character and Bradley Cooper's character, but it was a more subtle reaction with Robert De Niro. And I think that's probably one of his favourite, most, that's one of my favourite performances of his in recent years, is in this.
Definitely.
Is in this film.
I thought I was going to be controversial saying that.
No, Diane, it's not controversial because everything he's done in recent years is shit.
Yeah.
it's the best thing. Of course it is.
Yeah.
By default.
I'm not a great De Niro fan anyway, to be honest. And I have had to watch a lot of his back catalogue at uni. I had to watch a lot of things. I've done the whole, him from the beginning. And I've never been a huge fan. But you're right, this was subtle. It was, and he delivers the big go get him line at the end as well, which is the crux of it. You know, go and get her, you'll regret it. So he's beautiful in this, definitely.
Yes, this was my second time watching it. And you know, when a film just really rubs you up the wrong way, that was definitely my experience when I watched it at the cinema. I think it was a combination of it having kind of been built up quite highly and won all the awards. But I think it was more that they kind of having mental health issues was wearing kind of a bin bag and wearing eyeliner and painting your nails black was kind of like symbolic of being sad. And there's a lot of kind of things that I think were perhaps a little bit lazy, and he's basically very an angry man, and he basically beats someone nearly to death, and we're kind of meant to overlook that because he's going on this kind of journey, and then it kind of wraps it all up at the end with, oh, it's all solved with the dance and falling in love, because that's how you get rid of your mental health, because you just fall in love and have a dance. And I think second time watching it, it was a bit like, this is not really about their mental health, it's just kind of like a bit of a long love story. Like, no one at the start watching it is going to be like, they're not going to end up together. It's just like, okay, when are they going to end up together? And I think that rubbed me up even more the wrong way. So I know that a lot of people like it, and I think probably in 2012, kind of taking on mental health as like a main theme was quite a sort of newish thing. But yeah, there was just like things in it, it was just a bit like, really, is that how we're gonna look at it? And the whole thing with Robert De Niro and his addiction to gambling as well, there could have been an opportunity maybe to explore that, but it just kind of wasn't. It was just another thing they just kind of thrown in. But I wonder if this is a bit of a problem with me and David O. Russell films generally, but I don't know. I was very, very angry when I watched it at the cinema. I came out and I was very angry. Whereas this time I was a bit like, I'm not quite as angry. I've reflected on my two watches. The performances are good and there's some interesting stuff in here, but I just think it's a little bit lazy in some of the bigger issues that it tries to maybe tackle. And it's a bit of like surface stuff. And yeah, the whole throwing a book out the window is just a bit, it's like sensationalist or a bit shocky, whereas the reality is of living with mental health issues isn't quite like that. I don't know. It just rubbed me the wrong way, unfortunately, but it rubbed me the wrong way a long time ago.
I think what you said about the when it had all the awards and stuff, that's probably why I went to see it. And like yourself, I was like, come on, impress me then. And it didn't. But I think my age, 10 years later, I'm more willing to accept a bit more nuances. But yeah, Diane, this most recent watch, was there anything else you picked out from it compared to the first pregnant watch?
Well, I'm very different to Helen in that I thought, just because the characters are quite laid bare early on, so there's no big reveal with any. We know everything about Pat pretty much in the first sort of 15 minutes. We know everything that's gone on with him and, things that he's been through and his family and that he's spitting out his meds. We know all that straight up, but that made me like him more because there was no sort of like waiting for the, but why is he acting like that? You know, it kind of like was everything laid bare. And I think that's kind of like a bit of a theme in the film. It's like everyone's very honest and the relationship between Pat and Tiffany is very honest, and they find out all the, you know, the stuff about each other that you probably do want to keep hidden in a new relationship, but it isn't hidden for them. It's right out there. Yet they still choose to be on each other's team. And, you know, that's the love story element, but that's definitely what I enjoyed. It made me smile all the more second time around.
So we've all watched it 2 times. I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
Apart from me, he's watched it 3 times. Can I be in your gang still?
No.
Can I still be in your gang?
But we've all watched it relatively infrequently.
Mm.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Which is a bit, what you're saying, 10 years or so has come out.
It has only just come onto Netflix though. So
yeah, but still, if it's a film you really wants to watch again, you'd probably have.
I put it on in the cinema. Well, at my own little screen.
Yeah.
I was talking about the filter. I love the film. I think it's a brilliant film. And the things that I was saying earlier that annoyed me don't outweigh. And I think there's an element Diane was just talking about the romance of it. And I think there was an element of, when I saw it in cinema, of wanting somebody to recognize my crazy, even though I didn't quite understand my crazy. So that was a kind of like a, and also, you know, she's hot, right? so not just anyone to recognize my crazy.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence, her. Yes.
But it's, so I think that there was that pull, but also it's, you know, it's fun. I think it's a funny film. I think there's some good jokes in it, and the dancing is pretty good. Like, it's pretty expressive. Like, I mean, I know it's not good dancing. Like, I know that, like, Anton DeBeck, is he the guy? Maybe if Anton DeBeck was involved, he'd be like, oh, that's not good dancing or whatever. But I quite like expressive bad dancing. Like, I quite like just letting it hang out and do that dancing. So I do like the film. I think it's deeply flawed and agree with everything you've said, Helen, on all kinds of things. But I still really enjoyed it. And it's still a film I wanted to show other people.
There's that bad dancing that comes at the end of a film. It's almost like a 90s trope we had with Little Miss Sunshine, Napoleon Dynamite.
Mm.
It's kind of a thing. And, you know, it was, I don't think I've laughed harder in this one when they try to lift the special move that they've been working out for. And I'd completely forgotten. I thought they must have done it. But then when they try in the competition, it goes completely wrong.
Yeah.
It's no dirty dancing.
It's no dirty dancing.
We have an episode on dirty dancing. I don't know if it's out yet. If not, it'll be out soon. If you listen to this episode, so subscribe and listen out for dirty dancing. But obviously, it kind of apes that, but also makes it more realistic, because we talked in the dirty dancing episode about infinite number of people who've tried that at a wedding.
I've tried it at a wedding, but not with my husband.
Your wedding?
My wedding, and my friend said, "Run at me." And it didn't end well.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Was there a better plan than run at me? Had you even thought about run at me?
That's it.
But I guess,
do you have it on film?
With her arm.
Because you had the music. Because you had the music, so you knew what run at me meant.
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yeah. Yes, I knew what she meant. Yes. But yeah, no, good.
So,
but the music to the dance scene, the fact that it's the White Stripes, and actually the soundtrack's pretty good, pretty solid soundtrack for the whole film. Really eclectic. Mm. And I think that kind of matches the whole vibe of it, actually.
Well, we know Tatton likes Jennifer Lawrence because she's attractive. Diane, Helen, where are you on J-Law?
She was fab in this.
I think she's a little bit overrated, personally. Yeah. I think she works in this, mm-hmm. but... Like, how many Oscars has she got now? Like 5, something like that?
Shut
she's got
up,
quite
does
a lot.
She?
No, she's got two, I think.
Yeah.
She's got quite a few.
What were they for? Do you know? Sorry, I put you on the spot.
Was one for this?
It was this, and was it American Hustle? I don't want to say
the other,
that, but the
other,
I think
David
it probably
Russell
was.
Film.
Yeah.
The other David, yeah.
Which I really don't like either. But yeah, she was nominated for Winter's Bone, I think was the first nomination she got, and then it kind of snowballed a bit.
Yeah, I think for me, she's really cool. I think she's like really, really cool actor. I don't quite get the buzz, but I think this is probably my favourite performance of hers on Revisit. Although I really like the first Hunger Games, but I'm not sure it's her specifically. I think the whole kind of setup of the Hunger Games is is an interesting one. But I think this is my perhaps my favourite performance of hers out now. So, yeah, this is actually, on reflection, a film I like quite a lot. Anyone else want to talk about Jennifer Lawrence or anyone else before we head to the scores?
Originally, probably in very, very early drafts, that Vince Vaughn and Zooey Deschanel were lined up for the role. So it could have been
a lot worse. It could have been a lot worse.
It's just really interesting. 10 years ago, I think that that's also someone I definitely wanted to save me. Zooey Deschanel is definitely someone I would have wanted to play a leading lady in the saving of undiagnosed Tatton's life.
Is this in the wake of 500 Days of Summer?
Oh, no. Oh, gosh, no. That was an awful film.
it's been reassessed, hasn't it, in recent years, certainly.
What a terrible film that is.
She's not the villain. Spoiler. I don't think Zooey Deschanel would have been able to have convincingly given the kind of like a darker edge to Tiffany's character. Yeah. Which I think Jennifer Lawrence just about does.
I think she really does. I think that there is she does troubled well. Like there is clear, she's not okay. There's no question of the fact she's trying to be a bit kooky. She is not okay in this movie, and I think that comes across really nicely. I love when she presumably this scene would have been done the same. With Zooey Deschanel, whoever, but when she goes running with him, but she's not even changed for running because the running metaphor has continued out, but she's actually still in her jeans and her coat. And I think she pulls that off in a really special way. And I think that there's a distress to her and a sense of almost a sense of chaos because she's in far too deep to her own emotions and trying to deal with everything. And this text thing, like, she texts this boy, doesn't she? And then this boy turns up like at the same time as he's supposed to be there. And he's like chasing him away. And she's like, well, no, I texted him. Well, she texts him. It's like, there's a tragedy to that that I think is well played. I think that everything, again, I don't agree with everything you say. And I think that all of those inadequacies are from the director and the script. And I think she turns up and she smashes it.
I think Vince Vaughn might have been a struggle.
Yes.
I do like him more now, especially in the most couple of seasons of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I think he's been great in. I don't know if you've been watching that. But I think at that time he wouldn't have been right for this role in the same way Bradley Cooper's. And Bradley Cooper's someone who I at the time was like, oh, it's just that pretty boy from
The Hangover. The Hangover, which I, oh my God, yeah. I did not like Bradley Cooper before this film.
No.
at all.
No, it's an amazing role for him. It was an amazing role. I mean, it was the A-Team before or after this?
I think it's before. That was a terrible film.
Yeah.
I think it's before.
But it's he's the same role. He's the same guy in the A-Team as he's in this, except his behaviour is, it comes from a different place.
Except he's allowed to smash things up and blow things up.
Yeah. But like, there's a huge similarity. Partly because Bradley Cooper doesn't play too many different roles, but there's a huge similarity between his craziness in the A-Team, which is designed to be kooky, and his behavior in this film, which is designed to be because of serious trauma and mental health issues. But I think that works.
I think it's time to head to the scores, guys.
Hello, I'm Kate Lever, host of Who's a Good Dog, the podcast for anyone who's ever loved a dog. We're one of the other podcasts in the Stripped Media family. Each episode, I ask a brilliant person to introduce me to their dog and tell me how having a dog has changed their life. Listen to Who's a Good Dog wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. They are all out of 5. You can have decimal places if you wish. And we will start with you, please, Diane, with your recommendability.
4.
4. Care to elaborate, or just that's a gut feeling that you want to stick out there?
No, I definitely recommend it to my friends, but perhaps not as much as my favourite ever film. So I think 4 is a good score.
Tatton.
I'm going to say four. I mean, I have recommended the state where I've showed it, like I've put it on. But you guys have taught me down from that a bit. I like the film less now I've spoken to you guys, because I feel like you've quite rightly pointed out some flaws in it. So if this was a 40-minute episode, it'd be three. But as we've stopped now, I'm going to say four.
Helen?
You should always go with your heart. I mean, this film and me have had a thing going back a long, long way. And I was thinking, you know, go in fresh. Like, you know, things have changed. Like, Bradley Cooper directed A Star Is Born. You've got to like him more than you did then. So, you know, I was ready to give it a go. But I don't know. It's just one that there's just too many bits in it. Like, Jennifer Lawrence carries the whole film as definitely that. And this time around, I was like, who's Jackie Weaver? It's not the Jackie Weaver. It's a different Jackie Weaver. But yeah. If you're looking on the credits, kids, it's not that Jackie Weaver. It's a different Jackie Weaver. I think I'm going to give it a solid three. I think if you haven't already seen it, then I think that I'd probably recommend a lot of other films ahead of this before I'd recommend that with everyone involved.
I'm going to go for 3.8. I think it's better than coming into it as a rewatch. I would have estimated to be lower, more than 2.5, but I enjoyed it more this time around. So I recommend it, especially to people who are a bit more mature than I was at the time watching it the first time. Diane, repeat viewing score.
Okay, it's got to be a three, simply because I would watch it again. I would enjoy it again, but it has been 10 years in between times. And as you said, I could definitely have found it in that time and watched it again, and I didn't. So, yeah, three.
Tatton.
I'm not going to watch it again, zero.
Okay. Helen?
I mean, I'm very, very unlikely to watch it again, but I have watched it twice. So two for each time I've watched it.
So four, or one for each time you watch it. So
two. Gets 1 point for each.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 1.8. I've watched it enough times. I'll watch it again, but maybe in 10 years again. Although if someone says, should we watch Robert De Niro in a film? It still wouldn't be this, but I'd still be thinking about this. I may be thinking, should we put it on? Small screen score. Diane?
Well, I did watch it on a laptop, actually. So, I mean, yeah.
And this is for home viewing. So this is TV at home.
Yeah.
Anywhere but the cinema, basically.
Okay. Well, yeah, it works. You know, you're not missing out on anything. No massive explosions being cut off on the sides or anything like that. So, yeah, it totally works. I'll give it a five.
Tatton?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, it's it could be, you know, maybe if it was made today, it'd be a Netflix season, like box set show, I think. And maybe it lends itself more to that than it does actually. Maybe some of the things we've been complaining about could have been teased out better over 6 hours than they were over two. So, yeah, I'd say it was one entirely five.
Helen?
Yeah, perfect for the small screen, so five.
Yeah, five for myself as well. Engagement score, Diane.
Okay. Remind me of this again, Kobe.
So this is
generally,
how engaged are you once you press play? Are you pausing? Are you going to the toilet? Are you checking your phone? Or are you like, as soon as you press play, I'm in it, not looking anywhere else?
No, I'm pretty in it with this one. Four.
Awesome. Tatton?
I'm all in. Like the Prime Minister resigned in the middle of this film, and I'm finishing it. Right? He or she, by the time I listen to this, can wait.
Yet you're not going to watch it again.
No.
Fair enough.
Done.
Helen.
A solid three. It's quite long. They definitely could trim a little bit on it. There's quite a big gap between them, kind of starting like the dance training to when they actually dance, because the pace kind of shifts when they're dancing, because they're doing something together and they're really focused and they've got this energy. And then there's like a football game, and it's just like takes you out of like the dancing bit. So I definitely would have liked a bit more dancing. Three.
But we've got Dirty Dancing for that.
It's slightly dirty dancing, accidental dirty dancing, this I think we'll call it.
I'd have liked a bit more sport. to be honest. Like, but again, this is why a series, this is why a Silver Linings Playbook box set would have more dancing, some actual on. I want to see some actual football on there. Like, I want to see you them. You know,
you didn't just want the tailgate party where they didn't actually get into the football.
That's very sad about that.
I think the I've forgotten. I'm going to go for 3.6 here. I've forgotten about the sections with like the fights and the football, for example, which I actually quite enjoyed because it's so, it kind of showed and probably leans into what both Tat and Helen were saying about this is an angry man because they got into a fight because of general knobheadness that happens at sports matches where guys have been drinking. So he wasn't a standout there. He was just someone who happened to be there, and had he not been declared bipolar or come from a psychiatric institution, he just would have been another guy who's involved in the fight, and that was it. But it was interesting that he was the focus of the rage when he got back to the house and everyone's saying, why were you doing this? Why were you doing this? Why are you doing this? But his brother was the first one to throw a punch. So I thought that was a bit strange. But I'd forgotten about that scene. So that's why the engagement score was high, because I'd generally forgotten. I was quite interested to see what was going to happen. And that gives an overall score of 3.57500, which is decent. It's decent. To everyone listening, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. That's at FlixWatcherPod. One of the main reasons to follow us is because we put out a little tweet asking you guys to enjoy and participate in the show, saying something like, we're reviewing Silver Linings Playbook with Tatton and Diane from Easy Politics UK, aka Simple Politics. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and the score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout-out on FlixWatcher. And we had a few responses here. Diane or Tatton, have you got the Twitter up?
Yeah, so I've got one from Liam Dempsey who says, Bradley Cooper is excellent in this, but it's the star-making performance from Jennifer Lawrence that makes it. She goes toe-to-toe with De Niro like it ain't no thing, and the final dance sequence is absolutely electric. So he's a fan and he would give it 4.5 stars.
Tatton.
Well, there is someone who's given it a score as well, but I'm really interested in Cinema Gulp, who came on to say, I completely fell in love with J-Law in this movie. Kind of you can hear him or her falling in love with J-Law and the heart pumping. And then the Flick watched a podcast, came back and said, but how many stars? And
no stars.
Cinema Gulp just continued staring at the moon. silently considering J-Law in this movie playing songs by My Chemical Romance to try and express their love for J-Law in this movie. So I've got no idea what the scores are there, so sorry.
From Scheitgeist Pod, I don't know exactly why, but David A. Russell's movies always seem a bit clumsy to me. I don't see the fuss. Lawrence carries the film with sporadic assistance from Cooper. And then we've got 2.5 dancy ladies emojis. And then he's added a bit more. This is one of those uni group projects where one person works their ass off and the rest of the group collect the grade.
I think that's slightly harsh from Scheigeist in terms of the uni group project. I thought it was quite cohesive. But hey, that's
what Twitter says.
Yeah.
Don't argue on Twitter.
Well, people have tried and come off worse for wear. Diane Tatton, can you sign off by letting everyone know where we can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to the listeners.
It's Simple Politics on Instagram and at Easy Politics UK on Twitter, because like letters and they couldn't have the good one and stuff. And yeah, when you're on there, Diane does all the good stuff. And as you can tell, she is the coherent one. So thank you very much.
You're too kind.
Cheers, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming on.
Take care, guys.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.